So in Pele Yoetz, he has a section here called Derech, on the road. Half of it is dedicated to being careful. You know, when you go on the road, there are all sorts of dangers that lurk in the shadows, and we have to be very careful about that. But we'll get to that on the second side of the page, God willing, if we have time. But the second paragraph is the one that interests me the most. And here, he sort of goes on a tangent in speaking about a certain Jew. He doesn't mention his name, who went on a long trip. He was a traveler, and this Jew recorded all of his adventures in the travel. It's like reading like Gulliver's Tales, you know, the kind of thing. You know,
Gulliver's Travels.
Yeah. So that's what he has here. So he tells us about all the anguish that this person suffered on his way. Now, once he's talking about this rabbi, and we're going to try to figure out who this rabbi is historically, because it really interests my mind, because he doesn't mention it by name. He goes into a discussion here about what's called Rama'ut. Rama'ut means swindlers or cheaters, forgers. Now, this traveler that I call the unknown name, you know, the nameless, anonymous, Gulliver's traveler, he went from city to city. He was representative of the Jewish community in the land of Israel, and he was sent on a mission to collect funds to try to support that community in Israel. And he went throughout Europe. Yeah, okay. You can sit here, David, if you like. Sit there, wherever you like. It's a handout if you like to take one. And he would travel from city to city. And he tells a long, in his records, he has like a diary in it, and he writes about his travels through Italy, and then he went from Italy to Germany. And in order to collect funds, he had to produce a document, or perhaps even multiple documents, that would testify to the fact that he is the man that he claims he is, and that there's no forgery, there's no swindle, there's no rama'ut, there's no cheating here. And that he's a genuine, honest-to-goodness representative of the Jewish community. But unfortunately, wherever he went, they doubted the veracity or the authenticity of his document. And in the context of that story, the details of which we're going to go into soon, the Pele Yoetz claims that there's a lot of Rama'ut out there. The reason why we suspect people who come to collect funds and we're not sure whether they're producing an authentic document or maybe it's a forgery is because there are a lot of forgers out there. There are a lot of swindlers. And he quotes a Gemara in Masechet Ketubot. And I want to share with you the Gemara and then we'll read it inside. The Gemara tells the following story about one of the rabbis by the name of Rabbi Chanina. So if you want to follow inside, again, for those who like to see a text, it's number 2 on your page. Rabbi Chanina havi hava anya davi rogil l'shdure le arba zuzi kol mala d'shavsa. This Rabbi Chanina had his poor person that he used to support him, and he would send him 4 zuzim every Friday. Now, 4 zuzim in their times was a significant amount of money. You may remember from Chag Gadya that you could buy a goat with 2 zuzim. So he gave him 4 zuzim. Now, a goat today probably costs a couple of thousand shekel, if not 10,000 shekel. I don't know what the average goat sells for, but in any event, 4 zuzim is a significant amount. And on a regular basis, on Friday, he would bring it over to this poor person's house and deliver it. Yom Achad, on one occasion, Shadrinu Niale Biyad Debesim. The husband was not home, the wife was home. So he said to the wife, you take it on behalf of your husband. And then Asoy Omrole Lo Tzarech. To his surprise, Rabbi Chanina hears from the wife, he doesn't need it. Why are you giving him charity? He doesn't need it. My chazis. Now, those are 2 words that are a little bit complicated, but it means, what did you see in his behavior that would indicate that he doesn't need the funds? Meaning, Rabbi Hanina was like in shock, you know, that the wife...
behavior, well, it's his wife, she should know.
That who should know?
His wife should know.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, I'm just explaining to you why Rabbi Hanina asked his wife and said to her, how do you know that he doesn't need the money? Because again, you have to understand, Rabbi Hanina has been supporting this guy for years.
Well, maybe that's why he doesn't need the money, because he's getting it from him.
Well, that's not what she says. She's saying when he's about to give the money, which Rabbi Hanina assumes is going to support the man on a weekly basis for Zuzan, she's saying he doesn't need it. So he's very appalled or maybe shocked or very curious. Like, what do you mean he doesn't need it? So she says the following. Shami dahavi ka'amrali. Okay, I'm going to translate this into English. I have the English translation. He says... She replied to Rabbi Hanina, people were asking him, Bame ata soed. In other words, what would you like to eat for dinner? Okay? And his response was, just one second. I'm sorry. Not what do you eat for dinner, but upon what do you, again, these are people who are speaking to this so-called poor person, do you like to dine? It'll become clear.
You have to dine?
Wait, just give me a minute, it'll become clear,
dine,
right, I promise. To dine, D-I-N-E. And his answer was, upon silver tablecloths or gold tablecloths. So in the footnote he says, the silver tablecloths were made of white linen. The gold ones were made of dyed silk. And basically, what's going on over here is that she's revealing a secret to Rabbi Hanina about her husband that he, Rabbi Hanina, was totally unaware of. Namely, that this fellow from whom, who's been collecting four zuzim on a weekly basis, is a cheat. He's a fraud. He's a swindler. And it's only after investigating the wife that she came out with the truth. The man has plenty of money. He dines on a regular basis on silver tablecloths, or maybe even on gold tablecloths. Now, the fascinating thing about this story is if you take a look at the last line, Omar, so Rabbi Hanina, made a declaration as a result of this episode. A kind of a moral, ethical principle, which he declared. And he said, Bo v'nachzik tov v'l'ramoyim. Let us show gratitude to the swindlers who pretend to be paupers in order to solicit charity. If it weren't for them, hayinu chotim b'chol yom. We would be sinning on a daily basis. In other words, the swindlers save us from sinning. Does that make any sense? I don't see it. So listen to the footnote. He says the following. He says, we don't give enough charity, and we're going to be held responsible for that. But since there are so many swindlers out there, we have excuses for not giving money. Because as a result of the swindlers, we distrust even the genuine poor people. So when genuine poor people comes and I don't give him charity, or I don't give him enough as I should, I'm going to be taken up on, you know, on high, you know, in front of the heavenly court, and I'm going to have a counterclaim. There's so many swindlers out there who are cheating us that I didn't trust anybody. And the reason why the Peleoids quotes this in this particular context is because he's telling this story about a rabbi, as I mentioned before, and the rabbi went from city to city, he kept producing his documents, and the people didn't pay any attention. Why? Because there's so many swindlers out there, so they didn't trust him. Now again, today, you can probably find it pretty easy to verify a document. We have like a notary public, some documents are, you know, on the public archives, you know, in the municipality. Sometimes it's in a computer. You know, there's so many different ways. But back in the day, could you imagine a Jew who's traveling from Eretz Yisrael 300 years ago, and he gets to Italy, and then from Italy to Germany, and all he has to prove himself is a document. Well, they don't recognize the signatures on the document. And this is all because there's so much cheating going on. Now, the language of the Gemara here is very interesting. It says, Nachzik Tova L'Ramoyim, which literally says, we owe a debt of gratitude to the swindlers. So if you'll take a look at number three, again, I'll present it to you by heart, you know, out of the text, but if you like to look it inside, there's a commentary called the Shita Mekubetzet, and in this commentary, he focuses on this statement that we should show gratitude to the swindlers. And he says the following, this is really an ethical principle. He says that whenever you have a cause, meaning something or someone caused you to get benefit, then you owe that person, or that object even, an inanimate object, a debt of gratitude. And he tells a story here about the Rif. Now again, if I had an hour, I would talk to you about the Rif. I mean, you'll have to trust me that there's no one as great as the Rif. I mean, he lived about 1,000 years ago, more than that, probably 1,200 years ago, Rabbeinu Alfasim. And the story about the Rif is the following. He says, Misha Bala Adam Toeles Onena Mimenu, Ein Royal Asot Shum Masa Shiyovalo Nezik Mimenu. He says, if somebody was the cause of some benefit that you gained, some pleasure that you gained, then you should never cause him any harm. You owe him a debt of gratitude. Now, did that person do it deliberately for my sake? He says the following. The Rif had a story with a certain person who came to judgment in front of him. He was a great judge. And the Rif refused to judge the case. Why? The case involved, amongst other things, ownership over a bathhouse, a Beit HaMerchatz. The Rif himself, on one occasion in his life, had bathed in this bathhouse, and it helped him feel a lot better. He was feeling physically weak. So the Rif decide, Lo Adun, I will not judge this case, Velo Oreh, and I will not hand down a verdict, B'merchatz Hazeh, as to the question of the ownership over this merchatz. Why? Because I might have to rule against the ownership of this merchatz, this person who owns a merchatz. He had certain debts, and they were threatening to, you know, because of the liens and so on, to confiscate the Beit HaMerchatz. So there was a whole court case about this. He said one of the dimensions of the case was to evaluate the market value of this Beit HaMerchatz. Says the Rif, I'm not getting involved at all. Why? Lufi shenaneiti mimenu, because on one occasion I benefited from this bathhouse. Now imagine, the bathhouse is an inanimate object, doesn't know him, didn't do anything consciously, and yet the Rif says, I can't judge anything that might cause a loss vis-a-vis this bathhouse, meaning the owner of the bathhouse takes good care of the bathhouse, I don't want to undermine his situation. And if the Rif said this about an inanimate object, how much more so, you know, multiply it 100-fold, if a human being gave you some sort of benefit? How much gratitude do you owe that person? And here what we saw as we started with in the story, that we owe a debt of gratitude to the swindlers. I mean, the swindlers are trying to cheat us. But as a result, we can come in front of the courts up on high and say, well, the reason why we didn't give enough charity is because there's so many swindlers out there. So now I owe a debt of gratitude to the swindler.
So basically, we should just have gratitude.
Correct. But gratitude to such an extent, you know, you can talk to me about gratitude from now until doomsday. So I would say gratitude means you did me a favor, I owe you one, I express my thanksgiving to you, and so forth and so on. But to say that I owe gratitude to someone who's trying to cheat me, because as a result I have some sort of claim up on high that could be a defense mechanism, or to say I owe gratitude, excuse me, to an inanimate object because I once benefited from it, I mean, that's going pretty far. That's not a...
You've given tzedakah, whether he's real or not, you've given tzedakah.
You gave him or you will give him? I didn't understand.
He's a swindler, Yep. He's a swindler and you gave tzedakah.
Right.
Well, you still give him tzedakah.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, so let me get back to that in just a sec, because David is anxiously, wait. So I'm going to get back to your question in just a second. You'll have to get the answer to your question, you'll have to put the page on this side, tip it over on the side.
Yeah. Is that defense a valid defense you were given in the heavenly court to say I didn't give because I thought it was?
I don't know if it's a total defense, but it certainly cuts down your what's the word I'm looking for, severity of your culpability, meaning it reduces it by a lot if there's so many swindlers out there and you don't trust anybody. So if you take a look,
because Zohar said that the court would say the swindler is not your problem; it's not your cheshbon.
So that's what we want to study now. That was Zohar's question. I just wanted to answer your question in order to get back to Zohar's question. But what is the law in a case of tzedakah when I suspect that this person is putting out his hand and he's a swindler? So that's what I want to study with you now. Is that okay?
Okay.
Okay. Great. So we're going to look at number four again. I always like to teach a text. That's my style. And I don't have translations into English, so that's my job here. And this is a piece from a sefer called Kovetz Zera Yaakov from Square, which is somewhere out in New York State. And he says the following: Yesh Choshishin Litein Tzedaka. There are many people who are inhibited about giving charity. Mishum Shaharbe Adim Yehem Ramoyim, because so many of those so-called paupers who are collecting out there are really swindlers. He says, "V'eino nachon." He says, "It's not right." Ki yesh bazeh sofek isur doraita. Now listen to what he says over. This is an amazing thing. The Torah says, "Al takpo tzitiyoti." There's a separate lotus, a do not, amongst the 613 for someone who closes his hand, he clamps down his hand, he's too stingy to give stock. Now, you don't know whether this guy is for real or he's a swindler, he's a cheat. You're in a situation of safek. Safek means you're in doubt. You don't know which way. But you might be violating a Torah prohibition. Lachen, he says, Yesh li zeher ma'od, he says, you have to be very, very careful. V'ein l'dadik im ha'ani, don't be so demanding, and so meticulous and so suspicious of the ani. Because if you're going to be so demanding, in other words, where are your credentials? Prove to me with your documents. Have you seen it, ladies, that today when they come around to collect, they always have a piece of paper? You know what I mean? Not everybody, but some people. And, I can say to them, look, let me see the document. I start reading it. I don't know. It doesn't say. This guy's name is not on the document. I know the signature. I don't know what. Today they have these. Have you ever seen in Yerushalayim they have these things called pashkavilas, those big posters? And they say that all the rabbis said that, any woman who's not covering her feet down to the toes, we have to put her into, and they quote all the rabbis. Well, I bet you if you went back to the rabbis, they have no knowledge about the whole thing. So there's so much.
I missed the whole thing. It's probably a neighbor.
I'm saying, don't you agree with me that there's so much stuff out there that's going on? People are showing you papers, and 90% of the people don't even bother looking at the papers, but and you decide you want to take a look at the papers. So he says, you know why you shouldn't be so demanding, so careful? The us. Yeah, I had a fellow here that I thought was a swindler, and I made him sign a document. He signed a document that he would come back within a week to pay me back. And he knows exactly where I am. I'm still holding on to the document with his signature.
Months and months later.
I keep the document in my wallet just in case I ever see the guy. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, this is life. This is what he says, ain't the document him on it, right? So now, in this case, I'm not going to give him a penny from now on because, he's already proven himself, in my mind, as a first-rate swindler. But he says, in general, you know what? If you're going to be so demanding with this poor person, as Bashamayim Edagdik Emachreh, you know what? God in heaven is going to take a look at you and he's going to start checking out your credentials, see where you're holding. Are you Roy? Are you suitable or fit for all the Shefa, for all the good that God bestows from above? And now, this is the punchline, or to answer your question from before. Vafilu im ha'anihu be'emes Ramai, even if he is a swindler, you gave him money. Kiyem bazeh mitzvah stuck. You fulfilled the mitzvah stuck. Now I don't know where he knows such a thing. In the footnote, he says it comes from the Chidah. Okay, so the Chidah lived like 2.5 centuries ago. His last name was Azulai. Almost every city in Israel has a street called Azulai Street that's named after him. He was one of the most prolific writers in world history, but certainly in Jewish history. He wrote tons of books. I don't know how he proves this, that if you give charity, in quotation marks, right, to someone who's not really poor, you fulfill the mitzvah. But that's what he says. I can't argue with him because I don't know his sources. And he says the following, listen carefully, I just want to get to the punchline. He says, you know what? If you have doubts about this person, give him money because, you know, you don't want to violate a terrible, severe Issa D'oraisa. But, Tov Lahasnos, you should make a condition and you should say the following. I don't know if you should say it out loud, but at least think it. He says the following. If he's not a Rami, let this be stuck. V'im hu bevis Rami, and he knows no longer b'toris matana. I'm giving it to him as a gift. That sounds like, you know, shooting yourself in the foot, right? Like masochism. He says, she'im yite lo b'toris tzedakah v'hu Rami, because there's a 50% chance, or whatever the percentage is, that maybe he's a swindler, he's a cheat, and now you gave him tzedakah. You know what you're causing him? You're causing him to violate the Iser Gezel. He's stealing. But if you say, well, if he's a real rabbi and he's a swindler, I'm giving it to him as a gift. And therefore, I don't cause him a violation of Gezel. Are you following what's going on over here? I think the guy's a swindler. But I'm going to make sure that he's not stealing my money. So I'm going to give him a gift. Wild, no? And again, you know, I talk about Jewish ethics to you sometimes. Jewish ethics, you know, is something that, you know, sometimes just boggles the mind. I mean, tell this to a non-Jew. Tell a non-Jew that ethically he should be giving a gift to a swindler. The words don't even, like, it doesn't even ring in your ears over here. And he writes on the footnote, Kein haya noig hagon Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Have you heard of Rav Auerbach? That was his minhag. And it's quoted in a book called Orech Tzedakah of a student of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, that's what he used to do. He used to give tzedakah with a tenai, a condition that in case he's a swindler, it's a gift. So that heaven forbid, if he's taking my money and he's a swindler, he'll violate, you know, the prohibition against theft.
I have a question.
Yeah, tell me.
So, isn't when we give tzedakah anyway, isn't it? It's not ours to begin with. I mean, when we're giving it, it's...
You mean everything is owned by God? You know, God owns everything? That kind of philosophy?
Like, let's say, for example, you set aside a certain amount per month to give tzedakah.
Right.
Then you're automatically setting aside, and it's not yours, it's going towards tzedakah. So then, if you're giving it, then it's...
I mean, you're saying that I can't give it as a gift, you're saying, because since it was already designated as tzedakah money, I don't even have the right to say to him, oh, I'm giving you a gift, because I'm taking it from that.
Well, I
see what you're saying.
And
yeah,
also
that's a good point.
That if it is designated as this category, then it wouldn't be stealing from me anyway, because it's not really mine anymore.
Right. So let me say this. We have to divide up our discussion into two parts. Your case is a little bit more complicated, so I'm going to leave that for the second part. The first part is simply forget about, you know, designated money. I'm davening in the Shtiblach, right near Hashayarot. No, not Hashayarot. What's Hashayarot? And the guy comes by. I dig into my pocket. I don't know if this guy's for real. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He looks the part, but... So in that case, we're saying the following, A, B, and C. A, we're saying that even though you have doubts, and you have reason to suspect that he's one of those many swindlers out there, you should still give him. That's A. B, even if he is a swindler, you fulfill the mitzvah of tzedakah. C, make a condition that just in case he's a swindler, let him have it as a gift. Okay, now we get to your more complicated case. And that's, I'm not standing in the shtiblok and I'm digging into my pocket. I have designated funds that I've already earmarked for tzedakah. Can I give that money to this person? And I have reason to suspect, because of the manifold swindlers out there, that he belongs to that category. So that's more complicated. That's not, I don't think that's what we're discussing here. In that case, you know what? I think you may want to be more demanding about his credentials. Because if the money's already earmarked, then that money belongs to the poor people. Mm-hmm. And he's not one of those. Hopefully he is. I mean, I shouldn't say that because I don't want anybody to be poor. Right. But what I mean to say, I hope he's genuine.
Right.
But if he might not be, you know, I'm playing with fire over here. So in that case, I would add another, perhaps another paragraph here, and I would say that you should not, when you earmark money, you should not designate it as money for the poor. You should say it's a sum of money, and I have to give that sum. Not necessarily from these coins. Do you follow my point? Mm-hmm. I don't have to take this money, okay, and say this belongs to tzedakah. Mm-hmm. I could point to it and say that value belongs to tzedakah. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's a great idea to earmark money for tzedakah, because you're going to get into all sorts of issues.
And
basically what you should be thinking about is a certain sum of money.
Okay.
And then now comes your question. Okay, I owe a certain sum of money to tzedakah. What should I do when this guy comes around? And I would say the following: if you really are in a situation where there's so many swindlers out there, then I would say don't subtract that money from the money that you committed yourself to give away. In other words, let's say you give 10% of your assets. Give it to a well-known, established, genuine organization. Let them decide how they want to divvy up the money. I'll give you an example. My wife and I are very involved in an organization called Yad Eliezer. Now, I don't check out the people. I give the sum to Yad Eliezer, Avizel, and his wife Hadassah. They're in charge of divvying out the money. They buy food for them. They give out packages. You know, they have a whole sal, how do you say in English, a basket, you know, with sugar and all sorts of staples, and they give it out once a month to I don't know how many thousands of families. That's their headache. So this is Berzon talking. Nothing that I'm saying to you now is on this page. I'm saying to you that if, let's say, you accept it upon yourself to give 10% of your assets, mm-hmm. Give it in a way that you have no doubt it's going to the right address. Don't start playing with, you know, this guy comes around and he puts out his hand. You don't know what's going on over there. You don't want to cheat the poor people. You want give it to a well-established organization, unless you know someone personally and you know he's genuinely poor. Mm-hmm. You know, well, she's genuinely poor. I mean, we know some of those people, you know, that are genuinely poor.
Ask another question. Maybe this is something that's kind of basic, but before there was organizations, is there like a specific like Torah criteria of what you're supposed to look for when a poor person comes to you?
Well, that's what this Peleoitz is addressing here. He's saying that person has to come with documentation. And that documentation has to be authenticated.
Uh-huh.
And he's not going to tell you, well, you know what, why don't you just give him anyway? You know, or give him a gift. That's not his style. He's telling you that it's the burden of proof is on the poor person, and that's his responsibility that weighs heavily on his shoulders. He's got to get himself an authenticated document, which may mean he has to go to local courts, the Jewish courts, and they put like the notary publics, you know, talking those blue, the red ribbons or whatever they are. He's got to do that. Now, yeah, go ahead, David.
The way you describe the case, it almost sounds like to give him the gift to avoid him being involved in theft, it's almost like you're responsible for the fact that he's a thief, which is not really the case. I mean, his bataka, his free choice says, I'm a thief, I'm not a thief. For you to avoid him being in a position to assume from you, it's like you're being a saint above saints here to to avoid him having to.
That's what I'm saying. It's my mind. A guy comes into my house to steal something. And I say to him, take it as a gift. And then you laugh, but I know people who did this. I mean, one of my wife's ancestors, who I knew very well. He's not alive anymore, but that's what he used to do. He lived in Manhattan, in a neighborhood where there were plenty of thieves, and on more than one occasion they accosted him, for
I
money.
I came back every week then, that guy.
Yeah, that's right. You might be encouraged him. Yeah, right, you might encourage him.
Well, there's nobody I know when it comes to, giving the duck on the street. People are handing it, putting their hand out. They have, a little purse filled with one shekel coin.
Right.
And somebody puts their hand out, they give them one shekel.
Right. I do the same. Yeah. That's what I do. Now, I want to show you something here. Again, if you're tipping this page on the side, and this is mark number 2, he quotes the Ari Yecheska, one of the great ethical preachers, who quotes the same story in the Gemara in Ksubis. You might remember about the case where he gave the money over to his wife in that case, and she told him that this is all cheap. And he says the following on the second line: Madu tzarich liot makir tova lahem, Elohim Ramayim. Why should you owe them a debt of gratitude if they're swindlers? Do they give him anything? On the contrary, they're taking from him. They're not giving him, they're taking. Ach, for what's the moral principle? Yan, since, ki al yadam, through their service, yesh lanu ezid tova, we have some sort of a benefit, then tzrichim anachnu lios makir tov, we have to recognize our appreciation. And now I owe him a debt. He says, there's a lot to talk about. Now, getting back to your question, David, I'm thinking if we can somehow make a cholent, mix these variables together. And let's say the following. Why should I give this thief the benefit of a gift so that I save him from his violation of theft? And maybe the answer is because he's doing me a favor. Because now I can come in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam, I can say, you know why I'm very stingy? I have this purse, like you said, Ora, which has single shekels in it. Why don't I walk around with a purse that has 10 shekels in it or 100 shekel notes? And the answer is because I don't know who these guys are. I have no reason to believe that they're legit.
You can have a tin, and if you feel like they're genuine, you can give that one a tin.
Right, but I'm just saying the reason why I give my standard one single shekel is because there are a bunch of swindlers out there, and I really don't trust them. If I knew for sure that this guy is starving, I wouldn't give him one shekel. I'd give him 100 shekels.
But what about the one of the dudes standing there every
right.
day?
Okay, I don't want to get into that. You can ask me a million questions. This class is not about Stucker tonight. This class is really about the following. Do I expect that people will trust me? Do I produce a document and say, well, look, there's a signature on the document for one of the rabbis that I'm genuine and I'm authentic? Do I have right to do so? So the Pellet, it says no. You don't have a right to expect that they would rely on this document. And if you take a look at number 7, which is on the left column, he says, the imlo yuchlu malet yichtuvu betoch haktav remes haromes mativo shel ubar. So in order to explain this paragraph, I have to read to you a little bit more of the Pel Yoetz. I don't know, somebody said, I think it was Raz who used to come to, she said that there's a translation to English of the Pel Yoetz. I don't know how to get a hold of it, and we really need it here in the library. But in any event, he says the following. He says, "Bevadai nimtza anoshim tovim." There are good people out there. V'yesh lahem sagat. Okay, yeah, and they're suffering from various. Okay, he goes into detail. I'm going to skip that part about the different tzaras that they have. And he says, "Bevadai al anoshim keilu." These people are suffering so much. Roy l'rachem aleihem, we should really help them in every way possible. Aval da'aka, here's the rub, here's the complexity here. D'chayshin l'ramai. We have a principle that we have to know whether he's genuine or not. Maybe he's a swindler. And now he tells the story. Ukvar mevi'im k'tav sa'aduta l'kdoshim asher ba'aretz. He says on many occasions, a person comes from one place to another, and he's trying to collect funds, and he goes to the Kedoshim, he goes to the holy people, you know, the holy rabbis of that city, who don't recognize him, they don't know him, and he brings them a ketav, he brings them a document, lahagid, and the document tells about the tzarot, or tzarat rabim, you know, maybe he's not collecting for himself, he's collecting for a community, and all the tzarot that they suffer. He says that even though that document heaps praises on this person about the genuine nature of the person, his status, his goodness, the suffering that he represents, and so forth and so on, shevach, and it's full of praises for him, nevertheless, he says, they simply dismiss him. Nobody has the time and the effort to check out the authenticity of the ketav. So they just sort of dismiss him. You know, if they're lucky, like you say, they'll give him a shekel. V'ein somchim v'ein mashgichin ala igrot. And they don't, you know, the rabbis are not willing to rely on these letters, on these documents. And he says, therefore, when this person comes with his documents over to this city where they don't recognize him, he comes to the Kedoshim, as he calls them, the holies, Moshchim es yadeihem. They really don't want to, because again, you know, all these documents are from other cities, from famous rabbis in other cities, or from his local town. And now he comes into a new city, a new town. He wants to get some sort of a document from the local rabbi so that he can go around in that town. But Moshe and Yedeyim, they really are very inhibited about writing anything out. Ki choshishim, because they're afraid, they're suspicious. Shelo lahoyed eidu sheker, they don't want to testify something that's false. The imlo yuchlu malit, if they have no way of getting away from it, you know, it's a... There's so much pressure on them. Yichtuvu betoch haktav, they should write in their letter of approbation, remez, some sort of a hint, haromez, mativo shel over ze. Now he's paraphrasing a Gemara in a whole different context, but they should indicate in the ktav in some way what's the nature of this guy. Meaning, on the one hand, they're giving the guy a letter of approval, but they know that he might be a swindler. So what they should do is, in that case, if they have to buckle to the pressure, they should write somewhere in this letter some sort of a hint that a clever person who reads the letter carefully will realize that there's something fishy going on over here. Valtzada hechrech notla, because then he was forced to write this letter. And they should have a different style if they really recognize the tzara, you know, that this person is genuine. So again, you know, you have to write the letter, he says, in a way, with a wise kind of insight, that, you know, there's one letter that you write that's genuine, and the reader will see that you meant it, and there's another letter that says, you know, check this guy out, he's a swindler, you know, don't. And in this presentation, the Peleoid seems to be implying some sort of a story. So guess what? We know today who he's talking about. Because if you take a look at number 8 on your page, Hagaon Hachida, you remember I mentioned before, when we were looking at number 4, somebody by the name of the Chida, Rabbi Chaim Yosef Azulai, and he says the following, Rabbeinu Chaim Yosef David Azulai, Nasa pam bonia. Now, remember I mentioned to you Gulliver's Travels. I mean, the book, Gulliver's the Jewish edition, so to speak, of Gulliver's Travels was written by the Chidah. The Chidah was a traveler. And he raised funds for the yeshiva, for the community in Israel, all over Europe. And he recorded in his diary many, many of the adventures, you know, the stories that, that took place. In one story, what happened was, he was on a ship, and there was a merchant on the ship. This merchant was a Ben Belial. He was an evil person. And he brought onto the ship massive volume of cheese, and the cheese was not kosher. And he wanted to sell it to the Jewish communities in Italy. Now, as soon as this socher, this merchant, realized who the Chidah was, he asked him to write a document, a hechsher, you know, like you have a tudat hechsher, on this cheese. And of course the Chidah immediately refused. He knew that this was not kosher cheese. So the socher decided that he'll squeeze out this hechsher by hook or crook. So what he did was he hired a bunch of hooligans, and they threatened the Chidah. These were some, maybe some of them were sailors on the ship, and they threatened, you know, to throw him overboard. So the Chidah realized that his life is in limbo. So he sat down and he wrote a hechsher. Now, at the end of the hechsher, and again, it's worthwhile seeing this inside, if you happen to want to see it inside, because here's the punchline. It's number 8, the second paragraph. At the end of the letter, he writes, when he signs his name, he writes, Hakotev, I the writer, Vachotev, and I the signer, Biyom Gimel, on a Tuesday, Leseder means for the parasha of the week. Now, whenever you write a date, you mention something from the parasha. That's what that style is. So the parasha was apparently Parsha's bow. No, I'm sorry. It was Parsha Shmos, the first parasha in Shmos. And he writes, Masnechem Chagurim. Do you remember when the Jews left Egypt in a rush? So they had certain belts around their waist. And then he writes, B'sefer Shmot. So the socher comes to the community in Italy, and he comes over to the rabbi, and he says, here's my ksav hechsher, and I have from the greatest genius of our generation, the Chidah. And he produces the shtar, and the rabbi realizes that this shtar was signed by the Chidah. I mean, that gives it a tremendous... So the rabbi in the local community in Italy is about to give a hechsher based on a letter from the Chidah, but then all of a sudden he notices that on the bottom of the letter, the Chidah writes, Sefer Shmot. And not only that, the Chidah wrote Sefer Shmot, Shin Ma Mem Vav, and then with a strickle on top, tough, as if it was an abbreviation. That's not the way we write Shmot. But the rabbi is looking at this, and he's looking, and he's mulling it over. What is going on? Until he realizes that Shmot is an abbreviated form of Shnayim Mikra V'Echad Targum, which means that you read the Pasuk twice and then you read Unculus. So immediately he rushes to his library, opens up the Pasuk Masnechem Chagurim, your belts are around your waist, and he looks into Unculus. And Unculus translates it into Aramaic as Charitzichon Yu Asirin. Now, Charitzichon is the Aramaic word for belts, but it has another meaning to it as well. What do you call it in English when a word has two meanings? Is that a... That's not a homonym. No. What's it called? Anyway.
Synonyms,
whatever. Anyway, in Aramaic, the word Charitzichon means cheeses.
Means what?
Cheese. Gvina. Okay? Asirin means when it's tied tight, but it also means that you're forbidden. So if you read it and translate it, Unkelus is saying that cheeses are forbidden. And immediately, the rabbi threw this guy out and he said, no way are you getting a hechsher. And this is the story that we saw the Pelioitz, who tells you anonymously about somebody who wrote this ktav, but he wrote a remez, you know, some sort of a hint inside the document, so that the reader, if he's meticulous, would realize that he's under pressure.
Wow, that's really cool.
Now, again, in the same paragraph, here in the Pelioitz, he tells a story about a rabbi who goes from city to city producing documents, and no one's paying attention to him. He goes to the Kedoshim, he goes to the holy people of that city, and they dismiss him because they don't have the wherewithal of checking out. You know, it's not like today where there are ways of verifying. This is a complicated business to verify a signature from across the world, 300 years ago. So who is this person who is traveling around the world and facing one closed door after another? Doors closed in his face because they didn't trust his documents. It was the same Chidah. It was this Rav Chaim Yosef David Azuloy. And that's what you have here in number 6. The Chidah's diary. Now, it's very long and very complicated, so I'm going to try to just summarize it as I read it inside, meaning I'm not going to read every word, I'm just going to highlight it. Again, the Pelioitz said, you know what, you get signatures on a document, it's worthless, because nobody's going to trust you anyway, because they have no way of verifying the document. And even if you go to the holiest people, it's not going to be worth much. So on the 16th of Menachem Av, some 2.5 centuries ago, the Chidah writes in his diary that he travels to Italy and he goes to the communal center, the JCC of that town, and he goes to the manhigim, the leaders, v'hirtzeiti lifneihem, and I showed him all my documents, and lo haminu malchei eretz, and the king, that's, he's using all this is in poetry taken from Tanakh, it's mind-boggling. Anyway, he says they spoke to me very graciously, with a great deal of respect and honor. They said to me, the way you appear in front of us, that's called chazutcha, it proves that you're a true and an honest person. But what can we do? You bring us documents with signatures. Here in Italy, we don't recognize those signatures. There's no one here in this country who can verify these signatures. These signatures are coming from far away, from Israel, from Turkey. So first, prove to us, verify these signatures. And if not, thank you, but no thank you. So the Chidah writes that I was totally down about this, meaning I was literally depressed, he says. I had come all this distance only to be rejected. After all this amal, all this work, and now I'm drinking, he calls it bitter waters, because basically here in Italy they're throwing me out. So I made a decision at that point that I'm going to go to the great city of Frankfurt am Main in Germany. And there for sure there'll be someone amongst the rabbis that will recognize my signature and the signatures of those rabbis in Israel and so forth and so on, or in Constantinople, which is, what's it called today, in Turkey, the main city, what's it called?
Istanbul.
What's it called?
Istanbul.
Istanbul, right. So Istanbul in our writings is called Constantinople. That was its original name. Okay, fine. He says, I thought maybe, instead of going to Frankfurt am Main, I would go to a city called Viremisch, which is in English called worms, also in Germany. Mm-hmm. Now the reason why the Chidot chose to go to worms is because the rabbi that he wanted to find, who he thought would save him, was in exile from Frankfurt am Main because of some sort of altercation with the community, and he was sort of in exile in Worms. His name was Rabbi Yoshua, and again he was the Avbezdin, meaning the head honcho of Frankfurt am Main. But now, because of this great controversy, already 3 years he's been in Worms. Now, I decided, again I'm talking in the first person as if I'm the Chidah, that you know what, maybe this great Rabbi Yoshua would recognize these signatures and he would save me. Now, I don't know if this will mean anything to you, but this Rabbi Yoshua is the author of one of the most famous Talmudic works. It's called the Pnei Yoshua. Now, on the 18th of Av, which is 2 days later, Nasati, he got a passageway on a very large wagon that leaves once a week from Italy. I'm sorry. Right. First he went to Frankfurt am Main, and then they told him the Pnei Yoshua is not here. And once a week, there's this agala, there's this wagon, like a train, so to speak, that travels from Frankfurt am Main to Worms. Okay, fine. Now he describes the trip. He says, it took us, let's see, how many days? It says, we arrived there on Wednesday. So I don't know, I'm not sure exactly. I guess it was a day's journey, I'm not sure. He says, we got there towards the end of the day, it was Mincha time. And immediately I went to see the Pnei Yoshua. Umar Ehu, his appearance was Kimara Malach Elokim. He looked like an angel from heaven. That's how beautiful his countenance was. Vehu bechazdo, and he was very compassionate, and he showed me a smile, meaning he was warm. And I told him about all my adventures, or all my how do you say negative adventures? I don't know what word I want to use here, right? And all the trials and tribulations up until this point. I described to him the trip, getting here, this agala, how sick I got because it was an unbelievable journey over mountains and stones. I had a toothache that was killing me, he says. He goes on and on and on, a whole paragraph describing the suffering. And now I came to see you. Okay. Halachti lebeit harav. I went into the rabbi's house. I brought him all these letters, these documents. Vayitzav lahavi ktav hapkivim mikushta. He says that there were some officials who were there from Constantinople, which is today Istanbul. And vayar, and then they saw ki chativat didei v'dideihu lacherim shekula matimot. And they verified that all the signatures were authentic. So the Rav turned to me, the Pnei Yoshua, and he says to me, Al tira, don't be afraid. Ki itchani, I'm with you. Veidotai zu, I'm going to sign a document testifying that all your documents are true and authentic. So then the Pnei Yoshua writes down a whole letter in which he testifies on behalf of the Chidah. And he sends the Chidah to the, I guess you'd say, the wealthy people in the town, here in Germany. And he tells the following story. He says, Halachti Eitzel HaParnasim, Dekila Kedosha Vermaisha, Vermaisha meaning worms. And they all had tainus, they all had excuses. And they all somehow put their faces down. And they didn't give me money. When I told this to the rabbi, meaning the Pnei Yoshua, he got very angry at them. And he berated them. So they came back to me and they said to me, you know what? Right now we don't have the money, but we're going to send the money over to Amsterdam, and the people in Amsterdam will forward the money to you. And he concludes this story in his diary by saying, Udvarim shebelivam kivu. In their hearts they fulfilled that pledge, but lo shalchu klum ad hayom hazeh. And I still haven't seen any of it. So when the Peleoids is telling a story about someone who had tremendous sorrows and he went from city to city and they didn't want to trust his documents, he's talking about the Chidah. So it's amazing because the Chidah himself suffered so much because of this suspicion that he's a swindler, like everyone else is a swindler out there. I don't know everyone else, but that there are a lot of swindlers. And the Chidah himself is the one who gets accosted by a swindler, if you remember that merchant who was selling the non-kosher cheese. And basically what the Chidah did was, he buckled under pressure, he wrote the document, but he added something that would indicate to the reader, if he read it meticulously, that this was all under coercion, and that the cheese was not kosher. And I guess the Chidah expected that that's how he would be treated as well, that people would not suspect him, he was an honest person, he had the documents. And if they would read the documents carefully, they could clearly indicate that this was true, this was reliable. But he didn't get that kind of treatment. And even when he finally got to the Pnei Yoshua himself, who trusted him, and the Pnei Yoshua pulls out his quill and writes him a letter of approbation, nevertheless, the people don't want to give the money. So what do we get out of this whole thing? I mean, on the one hand, you know, there's a sort of a paradox here, because the Peleoids is saying that if you want to dispel the suspicion against you that you're a swindler, then you better get some sort of verification. But on the other hand, he's telling a story about the impossibility of ever satisfying the other people who receive you and they suspect you. Because if you can't validate those documents, they're not gonna pay any attention to you. So it's sort of like we're in a, I don't know, I call it like a catch-22 situation. Now, as I told you, this essay is written under the title Derech, which means the trials and tribulations of traveling on the road. So if you'll turn to the other side of your page, we'll go back to the first paragraph in the Peleoids. And he says the following. This is the very beginning of Derech. Amru Rabboseinu Zichronam Livracha, our rabbis have taught us, Kol Adrachim Bechezka Sakana, that whenever you go out on the road, you have to assume your life is in danger. Now, would this be true today? I don't know. But we know how many car accidents of Rahman al-Islam there are. I don't know if you've ever witnessed one. I mean, it's horrible if you pass one by. So even in our, what are we, in the 21st century, we still know how dangerous it is to go out there. I'm not even talking about terrorism and all that other stuff. In South Africa, I think I was told they have, it's common that they hijack your car or something. I don't know if there's a word for it. They stop you in your car and they throw you out of your car. I mean, they're terrible things. So he writes, a person is never allowed to expose himself to danger. And he'll think that God is going to protect him. Maybe God won't do a miracle for him if he exposes himself to danger. V'im osim lo nes, if God has to intervene and save him and change nature, then menachim lo misliyosa. You know, he's using up his merits. But why waste it on this? Just avoid sakana. So if you have to go out on a trip, we're going to learn about all sorts of precautions that you can take in order to reduce the level of danger on this trip. Now, we don't have too much time here to do this. I'm going to probably take the pages back and give it to you next week again so we can do the second half of this. But I just want to tell you this. The Peleoids quotes an unbelievable statement in the Gemara Gittin. And this is number 6 on your page. And he says, Haderech mekatzer yomav ushnosov shel adam. The Gemara quotes a statement based on a pasuk in Tehillim that going out on the road could really curtail your life. Now, I'm not sure if he means because of the dangers, or maybe he just means that it's so tense provoking, you know, it creates such tension that it shortens your life. There are just so many surprises in the road and on the way. Now we have one parasha in the Torah that you may remember, which is called the parasha of Egla Rufa. And in that case we find, unfortunately, a slain body between two cities. And the Zakenim, the elders of the city that's closest, have to come down during this whole ritual called the Egla Rufa, and they have to make a declaration that it wasn't our hands that spilled this blood. So the Gemara in Sota says, why would the elders of the city be suspect that they have to make a declaration, we are not responsible for this death? And the Gemara answers, because maybe this person was a traveler, he came into your city, and when he had to leave, you did not provide him with provisions. And when a person comes through the town, the elders of the town are responsible to make sure that we supply him with provisions because he's going out into the road. Now, if they didn't provide him with provisions, he had no choice but to try to, in Hebrew it's called lelastemes abrios. How would you say that in English? To hold up people. You remember the old westerns, you know, where they hold you up? You know what I'm saying? This is a hold up. And as a result, he got killed. But the reason why he was so desperate and he put himself into that situation where he got killed is because they sent him out of the city without provisions, and he was starving and he was desperate. Okay then, now if anyone's interested, I'll do some parsha. We'll take a 5-minute break, get ourselves a little tea and so forth and so on. And I'll thank you for coming tonight, and hopefully I'll see you next week. Bring your friends.
That was very interesting.
Okay, good. Well, this is part one of a 2-part series because we're still on one page in the Peleoids of a book that's hundreds of pages long.
Wow.
Okay.